I'm glad that you're here this evening. Hope you've had a good day. We want to continue tonight with the Sermon on the Plain, found in Luke chapter 6. Last time we were looking at the Sermon on the Plain, and we were looking at conditions of discipleship, in particular with the Beatitudes and the woes in the Gospel of Luke chapter 6, verses 20 to 26 is where we ended last time. And before we begin this evening, wondered if there are any questions or anything that one would care to add. It's on automatic. Air conditioning. Well, if you think of it later, we'll go at it, okay? All right. Thank you, Weave. Tonight I want us to continue with the Sermon on the Plain and hopefully get finished with chapter 6 so that next time we can move ahead with the healing of the centurion's servant and some other things in chapter 7. We have, once again, some parallels here in the Sermon on the Plain in Luke, where Jesus is on the level plain with folks, and the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew, where he is above them, showing his superiority to Moses and the law of Moses, addressing commandments to love, addressing commandments to not judge, and how love and judging go together, and putting down deep roots, ending with a very familiar story out of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew, at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, with the men who build their houses, one on the rock and one on the sand. So we do have those parallels, but there are some particular Lucan differences here, different from Matthew. In verses 27 to 36, we find Jesus talking about love, and love in particular, love for enemies. Sounds very familiar, but there are a few differences, as I said. But I say to you that listen, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. From anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. Give to everyone who begs from you, and if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask for them again. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even the sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. If you lend to those from whom you hope to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love your enemies, do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, for He is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. First of all, Jesus addresses this teaching about love and loving enemies in particular. Notice He says, to all of those who hear. He's not addressing it just to anyone and everyone, but He says the condition to really understand, the condition to truly be a child of the Most High, as He speaks of God later, is to listen, to pay attention. I say to you that listen, which is also His way of trying to catch the attention of the crowd, trying to get them to pay attention to what He has to say. And He addresses here, addresses concretely, not abstractly, but concretely, a connection between doing good and both giving and receiving blessing. For in doing good, you are giving blessing, but you will also receive blessing from God. However, not if the reason you do good is to receive blessing from God. You do good because you've already received blessing, and you may receive more, but if you do good hoping, and He talks about here, don't lend to somebody hoping to get at least that much in return. If you do good because you're hoping then that God's going to bless you more, then you're doing it for the wrong reason, and you are not truly a child of the Most High. So once again, we get, just like in the Gospel of Matthew and the Sermon on the Mount, a lot of what Jesus says is about our attitude, what starts out in our heart and in our mind, and how that plays out, the attitude. When He says here, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you, as I put here in the notes, abuse here, the word for abuse, is used both for physical and verbal abuse. So don't just do good. Don't just pray for those who verbally abuse you. They may tell you off and you turn around and say, oh, Lord, you need to really straighten them out. And by the way, if you need some help, give me the opportunity. But also those who physically abuse. Now, that's a real tough one because we know that verbal and physical abuse lead to emotional abuse and oftentimes carry on even beyond. But here Jesus says that when that happens to you, you shouldn't retaliate. I mean, what do you want to do? Somebody knocks you down, what do you want to do? The natural human reaction is, okay, give me a chance to take a poke. But what Jesus is saying here is, if they abuse you, whether it's physically or verbally, don't look to get even, rather pray for them. I will tell you, my sons and I didn't always get along. In fact, I'm surprised that we survived the late middle school and some of the high school years. And I mean that we, not just them. And there were times where it got pretty loud. And there were times when one of my sons wanted me, he had done something, and I told him I was taking something away, and he said he hated me. I said, I love you. He wanted me out of the room, and I said, no, I'm not leaving the room. I pay the rent on the house. I'm not leaving the room. I want you to listen to me and listen to what. No, I'm not going to listen. I hate you. Get out of here. But I love you. Even to the point to where this child of mine attempted to shove me, did ball up his fist and use it more than once, and every time said, yeah, I'm sorry you did that, son, but I still love you. And eventually, I got him in a bear hug and wouldn't let it go, and he couldn't swing anymore. And so when he finally calmed down, the last thing I said was, you know, I know that you really don't mean this deep down inside. I know you're just reacting, but I want you to know from deep down inside I love you. And I turned around, walked out, and shut the door. He didn't talk to me for a few days. That's okay. But I'm close to my sons, and I hope that we're all better for it. Trust me, I wanted to turn around like I was going to leave and spin back around. Especially since at this point in time my son was bigger than me, I still wanted to do it. But that kind of thing is not, while that's our reaction, and I didn't always react that way to my children, so don't think that I'm not ready for beatification. It might be, two of the miracles might be that I didn't kill my sons through the teenage years. Yeah, there is a reason why some animals eat their young, I think. But you know, I didn't always react that way with them. But I think that eventually that made more of a difference than had I turned around and started whipping the tar out of them. And so here, when Jesus is talking, it's very tough because he's talking to people who've been abused by the Romans, they've been abused by the tax collectors, they've been abused by, in the past, by Herod the Great, and now by Herod Antipas. Everybody stomped on them. And yet he says, and he's talking also to people who are in the lower middle class to lower class as we would have today. And he's saying to them, the harder thing, but the right thing, is to pray for those who abuse you. Not to always seek to get back, but to pray for them. And then, of course, if anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. There is a difference here between Luke and Matthew. Luke says, Jesus says, if anyone strikes you on the cheek. In Matthew, if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, which the only way a right-handed person can strike you on the right cheek is to backhand you, which was an insult. But Jesus said, don't turn around and react. Turn the other. In other words, the call here is to have an attitude of love as a foundation which issues forth in action. It's not just a call to verbal prayer. It's a call to living out that prayer with others. Even those who abuse us, even those who hate us, even those who spit on us. And that's not an easy thing to do. But think about all the times that Jesus, and I know people say, oh, he was the Son of God. Well, but he was in the flesh too. And he faced temptation. and he had to agonize whether to die or not. And then when he was hanging on the cross, Luke records that first saying, a prayer of forgiveness to the ones that had just spit on him and beat him and put the nails in him. That's the standard that he's putting out here. It's not just a call to verbalize prayers on behalf of them. It's a call not only to pray for them verbally, but to live toward them with an attitude of love, an attitude of prayer. We also find here Luke talking about an attitude of non-resistance when it comes to giving. Do not ask to be given back what is taken. That's hard too, isn't it? Somebody takes something. From the time you're a child, somebody runs up and takes your ball, what do you want to do? Knock them down and get it back. Well, some people sit down and cry because they want mommy or daddy or somebody else to get it back. But when I was growing up, you'd run and knock them down and get it back. But Luke says, you know, take this attitude of non-resistance. Give to everyone who begs from you, and if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask for them again. And then he gives the golden rule. Do to others as you would have them do to you. We find that in various forms in the Old Testament and even in some of the intertestamental literature, such statements as that which you would not want, that which is hateful to you, do not do to any man. No, there are times where we can't take abuse forever, especially when it gets to the point where it's an endangerment of life. I want marriages to last forever, but when it's an endangerment to your life constantly and it becomes a war zone, leaving is not the unpardonable sin. When you've done everything you can, leaving is not the unpardonable sin. So I think there are, for us, we see limits. I don't think Jesus wants us to be abused and abused and abused and abused and abused over and over and over again by the same folks in the same way. And I think there's a part of our responsibility, Jim, to if we're in that kind of situation, to keep ourselves from being put in those situations again. We should learn. Should is the operative word. But yeah, I mean, I don't think Jesus here is trying to say we need to be a bunch of little mild. We are poor little sheep who've lost our way, poor little me. But I think he's saying that our natural reaction should not be to immediately retaliate every time. And that with the prayers and this idea of not looking for something back, that perhaps that might help change the attitude of the person who's doing the abuse. And he says, do not expect the equivalent treatment as a reason you treat others well. In other words, the operable question is, verses 31 to 34, why do you do the things that you do? Why do you help people? Why do you do good for them? Why do you pray for them? Is it so you can get back from God or so you can get back from them? If that's the case, he says, your attitude's all wrong. And God is really not going to recognize that and reward you for it if that's your attitude. It's also in Luke where we have that parable about... Or Jesus tells a story about going when he's at a banquet and saying, don't invite the people, we'll deal with this later, but don't invite the people who can invite you and feed you some other time, but invite the poor. Invite the hungry, invite the ones who can't pay you back. And if you do that out of an attitude of love, then you receive far more from that connection than if I invite William to dinner because I know one of these days in the next couple of weeks he's going to invite me in. And while I may only serve him filet, he might serve me deer meat. Edward Schweizer writes, the life of God's goodness is to open us to prayer and proper actions based on true caring. But he says, not to a patronizing Christian love, but a love that truly cares. We don't deal with people in our Christian love. We don't deal with them from a position of we patronize them, but rather that love should be genuine. That prayer should be genuine. That wishing the best for them should be genuine. If you lend, do not do so expecting a return favor or to have chips to call in later on. And not just lending money. You help somebody else because you think, now they'll really owe me off in the future and I can call those chips in when I'm really in trouble or in need. Clint Eastwood in the movie just flashed through. It's where Gene Hackman plays the president. No. It's the other one where Gene Hackman plays the president and he ends up having an affair with the senator's wife and kills her. Absolute Power. Thank you, Jim. At one point later on, somebody says, well, you don't want to do this. You've now got a chip in the game. You don't want to turn him over. You've got a chip in the game. Now, that's not why we should do things, so we've got a chip to play in the game. Love of enemies is shown by doing good deeds, especially for those who are unattractive or not like us, even if we know right from the get-go they're undependable. If they're in need, true love is shown by doing good when they're in need, even if we know that they're undependable. These things are real easy for us to do, right? Yeah. I don't think so. And the reward from God is that we will become what we seek to be. Children. I know he says sons of God, but children of God. That's the reward. Not that God's going to give us extra stars in our crown or we're going to get a bigger mansion on the hill in the sweet by and by with all the pie in the sky. But rather that the reward that we should seek is that we actually live like children of the Most High. I'll repeat that because it's hard for us to do, hard for me to do. Our reward is not that we're going to get a bigger mansion. It's not that we're going to be sitting up there right next to God with that big Tar Heel flag. It's not that we're going to be right next to God on the right hand of God in a bigger house with a bigger crown than anybody else. The reward we should seek is that we actually do start living more and more like God. But wait a minute, I want to be paid. No, we've already been paid. Right? Jesus' life, crucifixion, resurrection, all the... I tell folks all the time, God's got to have a sense of humor to put up with me. I know y'all agree. That's okay. But we've already been paid. Our reward then should be that we actually become what God wants us to become. So in a way, as we become what God wants us to become, we're giving back to God, but we're becoming better. And that's reward. And why do we do that? Should we expect special favors from God? I mean, let's face it. We do pray oftentimes, begging God and hoping that God is going to give us a break or cut somebody we know some slack because, you know, Lord, I did this and I did that and I prayed and I prayed and I prayed and I named it and claimed it. So you really need to do that. But why should we expect special favors if we're children of God? Because God is kind even to those who are ungrateful and wicked. And if God's kind to them, and God is merciful to them, or us, we're called on to be merciful. Difference here between late in the Sermon on the Mount, the end of chapter 5, you must therefore be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. And we say, oh, well, you know, we can't really be perfect. Well, we can strive for it. The word there in the Greek text in Matthew means mature, but notice the difference here. Luke, once again, is dealing with all of these people, some who are the haves, a lot who are the have-nots, and the have-nots don't get much mercy. And notice what Luke says here. Be merciful as God is merciful. Not be perfect, but be merciful. as God is merciful. Because if God is merciful to us, any of us perfect? Any of us deserve all the good God gives us? I don't. Any of us that haven't missed the mark, which by the way is what the word wicked means, to miss the mark, even by missed it by this much, Maxwell's mark. Because God is kind, then we too are called to be kind and merciful. You know, people talk about, oh, you know, the hard sayings of Jesus, and a lot of times what they go to are things that are very enigmatic. Quite frankly, these are hard sayings, or difficult sayings, for most of us. These are the hard sayings of Jesus. Love your enemies. Pray for those who abuse you. Be merciful even to the ungrateful and the undeserving and the untrustworthy. Why? Because God is kind to them and God has been kind to you. And then we move to the point of loving and judging others. He says, therefore, do not judge and you will not be judged. Do not condemn and you will not be condemned. Forgive and you will be forgiven. Give and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back. Basically what Jesus says there is, what goes around comes around, whether it's good or bad. Right? Isn't that what he's saying? What you give, you can expect to boomerang, one of those Australian things. Yeah, I used to have one of those Australian tee shots when I played golf. It was a boomerang. It went way out that way and came right back this way. And usually out into the woods. But that's what he's saying here. What we give to others, be careful. What you give to somebody else, you just might get back in return. And not always good. It might be what you give out bad in being harsh in the way you judge. Even in judging. Now, yes, there is some judgment that needs to go on. But we should be careful about being overly judgmental and harsh in our judgment, but even in judging should seek to, as much as possible, find places for grace and for mercy. In fact, it is directly linked to God's mercy and our becoming children of the Most High. He says, he also told them a parable, can a blind person guide a blind person? Will not both fall into a pit? A disciple is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully qualified will be like the teacher. Why do you see the speck in your neighbor's eye, but do not notice the log in your own eye? Or how can you say to your neighbor, friend, let me take out the speck in your eye, when you yourself do not see the log in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your neighbor's eye. All of this is linked to caring and taking care of ourselves. The first person that we need to judge, first person I need to judge, that's right, is the first person. I. Didn't know you were going to get an English lesson, did you? The first person we need to judge is I. And when we can find our own life clean, then we can play judge and jury. But until our own life is clean, we have to be careful about how we judge. That doesn't mean we have to overlook everything, but we have to be careful about how we judge. It's interesting here, too, when he says, do not judge, you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven, etc. Words such as set free, that's one translation for this. Set free and condemned are used of prisoners. But they also, if you go back to Luke chapter 4, remember when Jesus read and made everybody upset? When he read from the prophet? And he says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to come and work miracles and teach you everything you need to know. No, that's not at all what he said. He has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Here, Jesus is saying the same thing. Not only of Him, but if we are indeed His followers, if we are disciples, it means we will at least seek to have the discipline of setting free, of giving the good news of repentance and forgiveness. And we as disciples especially need to be careful against harshly judging. The log in your own eye makes you blind. That's a connection when Jesus says, is it okay for a blind man to lead a blind man? Well, they'll both end up in a hole. By the way, in Deuteronomy, one of the things that will... one of the curses, the blessings and curses in Deuteronomy 27-28 is, cursed is anyone who misleads a blind man down the road. That's pretty low, right? Yeah. Oh, just three more steps, but watch that last one. It's a big one. Yeah. But he says, you know, if we're not careful, we'll be blinded by our own shortcomings so much that we won't look at them and we'll hurt others instead of helping them. We need to be fully instructed in the teachings of the teacher. But then we need to recognize we're not above the teacher. We simply become fully instructed and more like the teacher. We never get to be above the teacher. We just become more like the teacher. And the teacher here that he's speaking of is, like we said this morning in Isaiah, the Hebrew word moreh that is used of God as you will see your teacher and you will hear your teacher. It's the same instance here. The teacher is indeed God in Jesus. As He teaches us, as He gives us that guide by which we are to live our lives so that we can become what? The middle of verse 40. Fully qualified. Christ wants us to become fully qualified. That is, worthy of carrying on His gospel, living lives in connection with that gospel. The writer of Timothy says what? Study to show yourself approved. Right? A workman that needs not be ashamed, rightly handling the word of truth. That's what it means to become fully qualified, is to study, to follow, to learn, to find how to properly understand and handle the word of truth. And when we do that, guess what? It's not just about standing up and reading it and talking about it. It's because it has become a part of who we are. So that we put out the proper kinds of fruit. I know some of us are kind of like fruits, coconut. No. A tree and its fruit. No good tree bears bad fruit. Right? If the tree is good, it doesn't give you bad fruit. But if the tree is bad, it doesn't generally give you good fruit. Nor again does a bad tree bear good fruit, for each tree is known by its own fruit. Figs are not gathered from thorns, nor are grapes picked from a bramble bush. The good person, out of the good treasure of the heart, produces good. The evil person, out of evil treasure, produces evil. For it is out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks. The image here of the tree suggests that hypocritical behavior will be exposed. Hypocritical behavior will be exposed by the bad fruit, by the bad actions, etc., that one does. One cannot claim to be a disciple, and produce bad fruit. You can try to claim to be a disciple, but if you produce bad fruit, it's going to be obvious. In other words, for you to be a true disciple means that you will produce good fruit. You will seek to do good to others. You will seek to have that grace. You will seek to be merciful. You will put down those deep roots building a foundation. Now, we mentioned at the beginning, you'll see, I use the Q or Quella word here. We mentioned at the beginning of our Lucan study that Luke tells us that he does a lot of research before he writes his gospel. He says in chapter 1 to Theophilus, he said, you know, a lot of other people have written things and I know about them and I've followed things closely, so now I'm going to write an excellent account for you. Or a good account for you, most excellent Theophilus, that you may, bless you, that you may know the truth about which we speak. And we talked about how much of the Gospel of Mark, which was the first gospel probably written, much of the Gospel of Mark is found in Matthew and Luke, anywhere from 70 to 77% of Mark in Matthew and Luke. Well, Luke tells us up front, I had other sources. We also talked about how Luke will, on more than one occasion, say, and Mary kept these things in her heart. So we're fairly certain that he interviewed people and very well may have interviewed Mary, the mother of Jesus. And we talked about how there are some folks who think that there was a source of sayings out there of Jesus that circulated without, just sayings without any prose around them, without any kind of, I'm struggling for a word here. But the setup, the context around it, the story around it, the narrative, there it is, that's the word I was looking for, the narrative sections. And that was found probably both in verbal and maybe even written form, because, you know, the gospel was first sent around verbally. And the Germans, who were the premier biblical scholars way back when, called those, that saying source, Q, which comes from the German word Quelle, which simply means source. We don't find some of this anywhere else. So what some people think is that this may come from that oral source that was out there, that oral tradition. This section about, because when he talks about no good tree bears bad fruit, that's different from where we find the trees and the fruit talked about in other Gospels. That this may have come from the remembrances, the oral traditions of those disciples who had passed that along, and eventually just short sayings of Jesus were written down. Also here, he uses the singular form of fruit, good, and evil, which indicates that life is one whole, either with God as central or without God. We don't, contrary to Shirley MacLaine, we don't live multiple lives. And we don't live them all at the same time either. We have one life, and so this singular is, we have to determine whether we're going to be a good tree, bearing good fruit because of our life connected with God as the focal point, or whether we're going to be a bad tree, producing bad fruit because we move away from God. And the heart here determines acts just like the tree determines the fruit it produces. An apple tree produces fruit because at the core, apple core, because at the core of the tree, what is it? It's an apple tree. It's not a fig tree. It's not a cherry tree. It's an apple tree. So you expect to get apples off the apple tree. Why? Because deep down inside, at its core, it is an apple tree. Doesn't have a conscience to know what it is, but we know what it is. By the same token, what's in our heart determines the kind of fruit we will put out, good or bad, positive or negative. And what we say and what we teach comes from the heart. What we say and what we teach comes from the heart. I've often heard it said that if you really want to know what a person thinks and what they're like, find out what they say when nobody else is around. Then you'll know. tree falls in the woods and nobody's out there to hear it. Does it make a noise? Or, I know what you're thinking. If a man is out in the woods by himself without his wife and he says something, is he still wrong? I've been told the answer is yes. But if Jesus is indeed our Lord, then it will show in the way we live our lives or the way we attempt to live our lives. Words and confessions alone are not enough. Worship must show in everyday life. It's not just enough to say we believe. It must show in everyday life. Then we have this final section on building. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and then do not do what I tell you to do? I will show you what someone is like who comes to me, hears my words, and acts on them. That one is like a man building a house who dug deeply and laid the foundation on rock. When a flood arose, the river burst against that house, but could not shake it because it had been well built. But the one who hears and does not act is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. When the river burst against it, immediately it fell, and great was the ruin of that house. Now, houses in Palestine generally didn't need a strong foundation. At that time, houses in Palestine generally did not need a strong foundation. Which means when Jesus talks here, his hearers get a different kind of picture than they're used to. They get a sense of security about the foundation of the house and about the status of the house if the foundation is dug down deep. Because normally they didn't do that. In fact, a lot of times they wouldn't even dig footings. They'd just start it right on ground level and put the building up. Here Jesus is saying that if you hear, that is, if you're truly listening, then that means you dig down and build on the strong foundations of the rock. Merely confessing and then counting on that to be enough is folly and is not enough. What Jesus is doing here is challenging his hearers not just to listen on the surface and then go about their daily lives, but to take the time to truly hear and understand what Jesus is saying, to dig into the Scriptures, not just to think about them, sometimes even to talk about them and wrangle with them, so that we know why they're there. In other words, just like the tree that puts down good roots and produces the good fruit, so we need to also put down a strong foundation. I never cease to be amazed sometimes at some of the folks that I run into who say, well, you know, I used to read my Bible, but I went down the aisle and accepted Jesus, got baptized, so that's all I need. I get nervous when people come around. I mean, not nervous, but kind of funny nervous when people come around and say, well, you know, I can't remember exactly where it is in the Bible, but I think it says somewhere. And generally, you're lucky if one third of what they say is found anywhere in the Bible. I had somebody tell me the other day, now, I can't remember exactly where it is, but I know the Bible says specifically, God helps those that help themselves. No, it hints at it all over the place, but you will not find that saying anywhere in the biblical text. So like I said, I sometimes get nervous about those kinds of things. Now, trust me, I don't know well enough to quote everything that's in here. I'm not Jack Van Impe. Y'all know who Jack Van Impe was? The guy used to, I mean, he memorized everything, and he'd sit on TV with his wife and talk about prophecy, and she'd say, well, you know, this was in the news, and then he'd quote something from the Bible over here, and then he'd quote something else from over there. I mean, he had learned it verbatim. But I'm not so sure he understood a lot of what he was saying. Just my personal opinion, that and a dollar gets you a drink. The drink machine set at Walmart worth 60 cents. 75 have gone up. I know, it's the price of gas. But to be a true disciple and to have a strong foundation means the discipline not only to listen, but to truly hear. Or not only to just hear on the surface, but to truly listen and understand. And Jesus says, when that happens, we will have a strong foundation and don't have to be as worried. But if we put down that shallow foundation, or no foundation at all, we will find ourselves in ruin. Sometimes we find ourselves in ruin because of what we think we know and what we think we've got, only to realize later on that it wasn't what we thought. It wasn't what we thought. Be merciful, as God is merciful to you. And put down a strong foundation. Deep roots, producing good fruit. Not because you want to get a nice shiny apple off that Granny Smith tree, but because God's already given. Thank you. Your question? Okay. And it's harder for us to love the sinner. Yeah, but we're told to love the sinner even if they're undependable. Well, how you tell the difference? Without God, I don't think you can. And even with God, sometimes we get confused because we think we're so much better. Ultimately, the person that I have to worry about answering for is me. Ultimately, the person I have to worry about my life being compared to, unfortunately for me, is Jesus. But I think we spend far too much time comparing our lives with this one up the street and that one down in the holler and all that kind of stuff. That's right, Lou. God bless you. Thank you. Go in peace. And I look forward to seeing you later this week.